I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
So about 3 weeks ago, Daniil Medvedev played and got through to the semi-finals with a masterclass against Diego Schwartzman. But that doesn't feel like today. Lots has happened since then. Catherine Whittaker is here, though. Hello, Catherine.
Hello, David.
Hello. And Charlie Eccleshare is making his first appearance in a while here on the Tennis Podcast. He's just swooped in for a cameo. How are you doing, Charlie?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm all right. All right.
Tell you what, you've got a better introduction than I did.
Yeah, that was great.
Yeah, but we have you. Four octaves and decibels different.
We have you on every day. I mean,
sure.
You know, familiarity breeds contempt. What can I say? Charlie.
Well, let's emphasise the positives.
I mean, you know, the podcast is nothing without Catherine, so that goes without saying. The day that we've just witnessed has resulted in a massive play. We had five matches here at the Fevertree Championships today and very nearly finished all of them. However, Andy Murray will have to come back and try again alongside Feliciano Lopez, who is just playing all the time at the moment. And Andy Murray, they won the first set against Dan Evans and Ken Skupski, and then broke back late on before Bad Light intervened. What were your impressions of what you saw out there?
I thought it was remarkably... It felt remarkably normal. I thought the contrast with yesterday, where it was this big circus of, wow, Murray's back. Oh, my God, is Murray going to be able to hit a tennis ball? Oh, my God, Murray's incredible. You know, it was so up and down. Today, it was kind of like...
He's just taking the mick out of me, isn't he?
I know, that was very much my inner monologue. And then today, it was like, oh, yeah, Murray's just really good at tennis. Of course he is, and he's winning. And it just felt like the most natural thing in the world, and impossible to believe that that was the space of 24 hours. You know, even the atmosphere, it felt... It was a nice, kind of chilled Friday night, and Murray was just doing his thing as if that was what always happens, which of course it used to be, but whereas yesterday it just felt, I can't believe what I'm witnessing.
It was giddy last night, in both on and off the court. Catherine, what were your impressions? You know, Dan Evans sidled up to me a little
Party
earlier
pooper
on.
Dan.
He sidled up to me a little earlier on and he goes, told you doubles was easy, didn't I?
Oh, he didn't.
After he got through to face Andy Murray and partner in the quarterfinals, and he put on a good show. I walked up to the legendary tennis journalist of many years, Richard Evans, who was just sat in front of the TV having a nice few crisps and a bit of wine, and he was watching Dan Evans. He said Dan Evans is the best player on the court at the moment. So I didn't watch any of it, so I didn't know. But what were your impressions?
The irony is that Dan Evans could be a really great doubles player, I think.
Yeah.
Just on that as well, it was funny, Tsitsipas in his press conference.
Somebody's just brought us another three beers. Sarah Wooland, who's part of our digital team here at the Fibbertree Championships.
And has been pitching Woolly's Gossip Corner on this podcast
has
for
she?
7 years
Oh,
now,
she's yeah. just left. Sorry, folks.
It'd be great, but unbroadcastable.
Yeah, we would get arrested. Charlie, yeah, where were you
on going? The theme of doubles bashing, Tsitsipas was, you know, talking about how he can't beat Auger Aliassime and it's just impossible. He's like, but I beat him in doubles, but I mean, who cares? You know, doubles is doubles or something to that effect.
Wesley Kuhlhoff unfollows him on Instagram.
Exactly. And, you know, whilst we're all in this Murray afterglow, it was kind of like, no, that's the wrong thing to say.
Mm. So anyway...
I mean, doubles is having a moment, isn't it?
In general.
Is it a
moment that is just temporary?
No, I think it's coming back into fashion. I think even aside from Andy Murray, obviously this is a massive booster. But it's definitely having a moment. Diego Schwartzman playing a lot of doubles. We were talking about... It feels like... Yeah, most players that are having single success at the moment are playing more doubles than would have been the case 5 years ago.
Mm. I would, if I were advising a player as well, in a PR capacity or something, I would advise them to play doubles. I think it's great for their image because you really get to know, I think you see a lot more of their personality playing doubles, and I think the way then the players then interact on social media with one another, I think it's really good fun. You know, someone like Kyrgios, you know, we were talking about earlier, but I think you get to see a slightly different side of him playing doubles, and I think that's true of a lot of the players.
You do get to see a different side, and actually, we've talked about it in the past, how we think it's good for their mental health.
100%. You know, 100%.
Get that company, because it's such a lonely existence.
Yeah, I mean, Daniela was telling me earlier that she used this really strange... I mean, she was talking generally about, you know, Murray's comeback and the various aspects of his story that she could empathise with. And she was saying, I miss the alone time of being on a tennis court. She said, I now have to take myself off and go for, like, really long walks because playing tennis used to be my alone time.
Wow. What an interesting line that is.
So it's the loneliest place in the world.
I think she is one of the finds of the
tennis
punditry world over the last year and a half. And
she sits next to Greg all day long.
Yeah, and they produce gold between them. And she is somebody who I think we're going to just learn a lot more about over the next few years because I think there's a lot to learn, really. In terms of her views on things and also her own experiences. That's what I've noticed she really brings to when in your conversations. And she puts herself from years ago in the shoes of players today.
And she's so recently retired that she's still reckoning with her own career. You can almost see her having realizations before your very eyes.
She's in love with the Queen's Club, isn't she?
She's misty-eyed about the Queen's Club, yeah.
We all are.
She's really annoyed there was never a WTA event here.
Yeah. Oh, well. Where do we get to? The tennis. Oh, yeah. So, anyway, Andy Murray and fellow players will be back on court tomorrow. Dan Evans, Ken Skupski, Feliciano Lopez, but not before two singles matches have been played. Feliciano Lopez, incidentally, who needs to play the second singles, then he's got to come back and play this doubles, then he'd have to come back and play the doubles semifinals, has basically told us, I'll just go straight on. I don't need a rest. How fit is this bloke? He's 37 years old.
Back to back to back. Has anyone ever played three in a row? Do we know? I mean, I guess it must have happened at some point,
but
it does feel amazing on on the Saturday as well. You know, we're not talking about early rounds.
He's right up for it. He volunteered.
It doesn't even usually the order of play says after suitable rest. This one just says after possible rest, not even certain rest.
I guess he can look at it as almost that first match, the first doubles match, could be like the warm up, and then he could just go straight in the next. Not even a warm up.
If it was me, I'd want after pizza. But anyway, I don't think they do that. So,
did you see as well? He's more than double the age of Auger Aliassime.
Oh.
There was a great stat that Matt Roberts came up with earlier that Auger Aliassime is
people
close.
People don't know who that's not his identifier.
No, it is now.
Is it?
He's graduated from student Matt to grad Matt to plain old Matt Roberts.
Okay.
Yeah, but he informed me that. Felix Auger-Aliassime is closer in age to Vuk than he is to Feliciano Lopez. Vuk, if you hadn't
by quite some way,
if you hadn't followed the Queen's Tennis social media channels, has become a bit of a star by interviewing all the players. He's only 9 years old, but he's way closer in age to Auger-Aliassime than is Mr. Lopez.
And he shares a birthday, as you already seen, with Federer, doesn't he?
Yes.
Another little one.
He does. How good was he today against Stefanos Tsitsipas? We all got it horribly wrong yesterday because we all thought Tsitsipas would win. What did you think, Charlie?
Did we
do those predictions? Did we predict that?
We all said Tsitsipas would win. I started it.
I guess the only thing...
7-5, 6-2.
Yeah, I guess, the two telltales. One is this crazy record Auger Racim has against him of never having lost. And the other, I guess, was how fatigued Tsitsipas looked and had to play that crazily long match against Shardy. So I suppose that might partly explain it.
FAA had his match against Kyrgios.
Yeah, and if 37-year-old Lopez is coping with playing a lot of tennis, then...
True.
He did take a heavy fall, Tsitsipas, because I don't get to watch the matches as closely as I would if I wasn't at Queen's in the role I'm in. But from what people were saying, it was really close. It was 5-5, and actually Tsitsipas was probably playing the better tennis for those first 10 games. He was the aggressor, and he was putting some pressure on, and then he took quite a heavy fall around about 5-6 and wasn't really the same again after that. And it strikes me that more than anything, he looks like he doesn't completely trust his footing on grass just yet. He's a wonderful mover, isn't he, on clay and on hard courts. He's like a panther just stalking his prey, going after the ball, and you never see any flicker of doubt in his mind about his movement. He's got wonderful footwork. But on grass, it's a different property, isn't it? A different substance that you've got to get used to.
It's psychologically as well. I found it interesting, that fall, because Felix Auger-Aliassime was looking over the other side of the net and approaching the net, trying to catch his eye to say, "You're all right, mate." And Tsitsipas deliberately avoided eye contact, just got up and turned his back on Auger-Aliassime. He's just completely in his own world, Tsitsipas. I mean, we know that. Vuk definitely knows that. Their encounter is, I think, my favourite yet, because of how perplexed Vuk was by him.
He went for the early handshake.
The last question, after a series of sort of misfires, during which Tsitsipas starts explaining sort of artistic photography to a very blank-faced Vuk, the last question is, "What's your favourite animal?" And the answer Tsitsipas gives is, "At the moment, peacock." And Vuk just sort of does this long pause and goes, "Well, it was really nice to meet you."
I think we've had enough here.
So good.
When a 9-year-old's ending interview.
He's just on his own planet, though, isn't he? Tsitsipas wasn't trying to adjust his behaviour or conversation for the fact that Vuk was 9. And this asking funny questions. He was just earnestly, why don't you get a haircut? Well, I did have a haircut a couple of weeks ago in Holland. And then he turns to his team and goes, what day exactly was that haircut? And Vuk's just sitting there going, "Oh, mate, it wasn't about the haircut."
I love him now. I love Stefanos Tsitsipas because this is me.
Yeah, he's brilliant. And then he was talking about Auger Aliassime in his press conference and was just going on about how amazing Auger Aliassime was. He was like, "He's the best player I've ever faced. If he plays the big three, he'll beat them."
I've got the quote here.
He explains that I can't beat him. He's too good.
Listen to this. Stefanos Tsitsipas: "He's beaten me every single time we've faced each other, juniors and pro. He's beat me at Indian Wells. He's beating me here. He's beat me a couple of times in juniors. I only beat him in doubles. I don't even count that."
Yeah, there's the doubles bashing.
He has the whole package to play big, to beat, and I'm sure if he ever gets the chance to play Nadal, Djokovic or Federer, he's going to beat them for sure. I will not be surprised if he gets wins over those guys. We will definitely see him in the top five, maybe not this year, but next year or the year after. I would expect something like this. He's going to win slams.
Greg's got him in his end-of-year top 10. I mean, he's got 35 players in that end-of-year top 10.
Murray's in there.
Felix Auger-Aliassime is one of them.
To be fair, he did go Auger-Aliassime in the top 10 at the end of the year. Pretty early.
Yeah, he went big early.
I mean, this is a guy who, Auger-Aliassime, who has played one Grand Slam match and he lost it. He didn't complete it.
So
how is that? He's never won a Grand Slam match and he's going to be in the top 20
probably
this week.
I've won that many.
Yeah, he's got as many as us.
So, you know. And
there's hope for all of us.
Was that US Open last year, the Shapovalov retirement? Yeah.
Isn't that crazy?
He has moved up in my estimation in the last 2 days significantly. And I mean, I always thought he was good. I think maybe other people thought that he was better than I thought he was. I couldn't quite see...
A late adopter.
All right.
No, but most people crow about how they were early adopters. I spotted him when he was 4.5 years old.
Yeah.
I always knew he was going to be
I spotted him once I heard loads of buzz on social media.
Yeah, exactly.
From that moment on, I knew.
I was looking at the makeup of his game in those tournaments that he was playing at in Indian Wells, and he was having these results, and I just couldn't quite work out how he was doing it. I was thinking, well, what is it that hurts everybody else?
Have you seen his forehand?
Yes, I have, but it's not like Del Potro's forehand, or at least that's what I was looking at. And then this last 2 days, to see him play three very different types of player, I can't remember who it was who pointed out that they've all been the next big thing.
I think it was this man here.
Oh, well, congratulations, Charlie. That's why we have Charlie Eccles here on the podcast, so that I can quote him and completely forget all about it.
It's like when you tell someone a story and they told you that same story.
Yeah, when you did that is awful.
So you know what it is?
At least I didn't try to pass it off as my own. I was close.
I remember with, and not here to try and claim that I found him or anything, but when I was interviewing Ajay Lasim 2 years ago, before anyone had heard of him, but I spoke to Brad Gilbert about it, because Brad Gilbert, you know, likes to chat about young players. And the thing, two things he said stuck in my memory. One is that he moved like the wind. That was the thing that for Brad. And Brad said the thing that if you're going to be an elite level tennis player, movement is the absolute number one thing. And I found that very interesting. And he said Ajay Lasim's movement is just off the charts. Was what he said. You know him,
oi, oi, impressions of my patch, mate.
I've got some great Gilbert stuff. And then he then said he's basically, imagine Djokovic with a really big serve. And I was like, that is an enormous claim to make about someone, but I do kind of know what he means. And then he drew a comparison with his own time and how much easier it was to become a top level player then. And he said, you know, back in my day with Andre, you'd have a couple of cups of coffee and boom, you're in the world's top 100. Not like that anymore. That also stayed in my memory.
It's going to stay in mine as well after that. Bloody hell. So what happened here with Ojean Liasim is the match against Dimitrov, the standard comfortable way that he beat him, followed by the way he just dealt with the histrionics of Nick Kyrgios, who incidentally got fined $17,500 today by the ATP supervisor for unsportsmanlike conduct in that and his other match that day. And then today, he just has no weakness, no discernible weakness, and also he has power, and also he looks huge on the court, and he moves in a way that he seems to not only have the athleticism and the balance. The court surface, the way that it's causing a problem for Tsitsipas to move, is not causing Ojean Liasim a problem, and he also anticipates.
And he always picks the right shot. I really feel like shot selection that it is something that is setting apart the real deal next gen from the
Shapovalovs.
The iffy next gen.
Have you given up on Shapovalov?
No, I just mean that's they're kind of as much as their best pals. It's interesting, they're polar opposites in that way, aren't they? You know, you put Ajay Liasim as that, he has that shot selection gift, and Shapovalov, that's probably his biggest weakness. Mm. He's got all the shots, he just doesn't have the selection.
I think that's one of the hardest things to teach and to learn.
Mm.
That is what blows my mind. He never tries to be that little bit too cute.
He always points out, though, when asked, how are you doing this? He's very quick to say, well, a lot of hard work. You know, I've been doing this for years. And interesting to hear you talk about your interview with him 2 years ago, Charlie. They were building the base back then. There were some highlight moments that everybody can think, oh yeah, well, he did this at that age and so forth, but it's more about just creating that foundation, isn't it?
Another clang early adopter story, but at the French Open 4 years ago, so when he was 14, I asked the person that manages the media for the juniors at the Grand Slams, you know, who your men's and women's number ones at the moment, and it was all Gerald Yassim. And I asked a bit about him, and she said, yeah, he's absolutely the real deal. Sung his praises tennis-wise. She said, there are agents absolutely crawling all over him. They're oozing out of his pores. Mm. You know, every seat in the stands for his matches is agents, pretty much, and his parents are refusing to signing up to an agency until he turns pro. And the head he has on his shoulders and the groundedness is, I mean, I don't think that's an accident that his parents had that approach, and that he has turned out to be the level-headed young man that he is.
So mature and calm. Yeah. Even the way his voice is so...
I know. I mean, I'm 45 and I'm not that mature.
Annoying.
Well, strange question for you. How do you recall how tall he was when you spoke to him a couple of years ago?
I don't think he was... Because he's 6'4 now. I don't think he was quite that, but I do remember... I mean, he was a lot thinner then as well.
Because he's expressed some anxiety about the fact he could still grow.
Yeah.
He says, I feel like I'm the perfect height at the moment at 6'4, but if I grow any more, that balance could tip dramatically.
Did you find that, David?
He could still be growing.
Yeah, I managed 7 inches when I was about 18. So, you know, that I was hoping to get 6'4 and then it got silly. So
Stephen Merchant does quite a funny riff on that, actually. But it's interesting as well with the height things. I did a piece with Opelka, who's obviously 6'11", pushing 7 foot, and I was asking him about, is this the future of men's tennis, you know, these giants? And he said the optimal height is that kind of 6'4", 6'5", 6'6". And we're seeing that with, so you know, the majority of these guys. You look at Medvedev, Tsitsipas, Alger Yassim, Khachanov, they're all in that little window, Zverev. And that's been a really big change. And I think you're much taller than that, and you do struggle mobility-wise.
Yeah, I mean, I'd have been all right if I'd have been 3 inches smaller. I'd have been definitely a contender.
I think if you're big, though, you've got to have a big serve. That's where you're...
I have got a big serve. I don't know where it's going, but I mean, it's big.
It was the most disarmingly not big serve I've ever...
A drop shot.
Relative to expectations.
That was 5 years ago, Catherine. You've not...
Oh, you've beefed up since then, have you? Right. Okay.
I tell you. Pumping iron since then.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right. Daniil Medvedev, 6-2, 6-2 over Diego Schwartzman. I thought that would be really close. Didn't turn out to be close at all.
Another match today, and say the same for Auger Eliassim Tsitsipas, which shows just how much matchups are everything in tennis, because Schwartzman looked brilliant against Marin Cilic. He thought, oh, this guy's a grass courter. Wow. You know, he made Cilic look ropey and he was an example of us saying, wow, you know, all the doubles he's playing, French Open doubles semi-finalist. He was a finalist in the doubles with Dominic Thiem in Madrid. You know, it's really paying off. He's not afraid to come to the net. He's being really intelligent about when to approach. You know, we're talking about him as an all-court game grass courter, and then suddenly comes out against Medvedev today and just doesn't have any answers at all to the Medvedev.
Why was that? What was Medvedev doing well?
Well, I was just going to say, it's interesting, again, you talk about matchups, because you might superficially be like, Schwartzman's good against 6'6" big servers. You know, he did it against Cilic. He will therefore do it against Medvedev. And for whatever reason, that didn't happen. Medvedev was able to bring his game to bear in a way that Cilic really struggled with.
Yeah, Medvedev was saying to Schwartzman, you're going to have to be aggressive here and go for it. And Schwartzman was like, no, that's not my thing.
Both wanted to be counterpunchers.
Yeah, but Medvedev's better at it on a grass court. His game is so tailor-made for grass. It's more Djokovic-esque by the day, isn't it?
I was going to say, he's one of the few people who will happily try and out-Djokovic Djokovic. So,
well, he'll get his chance tomorrow because he's playing Gilles Simon.
Oh, God.
Who that match
might never end.
Who beat Nicolas Mahut 7-6, 5-7, 7-6 in 3 hours and 20 minutes. It is the longest match on record here at the Queen's Clubs since they started measuring it in 1991, 28 years ago.
So Mahut now has the Queen's and Wimbledon records.
That's a good stat and a claim to fame.
And lost both of them.
Oh, no!
Yeah. Didn't he also lose a final here having had match point?
I mean, come on, Charlie. Give the bloke a break.
He is one of those unfortunate souls.
A pub quiz question answer waiting to happen.
Yes.
I'll have to hurry you, teams.
However, yes, it was 2007. He missed
against Roddick?
Forehand into the tape against Andy Roddick on match point.
Can I do my best ever name drop? Seeing as you've brought that up.
This better be good.
I watched that match with Cilla Black.
That is incredible.
I wasn't expecting that.
Here, right. On the tournament director's balcony. Yep. She wouldn't have said that she was watching it with me.
No, that's
but
true.
I was stood right
in the
next
vicinity
to her,
of Cilla Black.
And I was very much watching it with Cilla Black. Right. She wasn't aware I was there, but we shared that experience together.
Well, the good news is, tennis podcast listeners, Google is available and you can find out who that is.
Cilla Black?
Not everybody was around then, and not everybody is from our isles and knows who that is.
Unbelievable.
I don't.
Maybe they do.
She was cheering forcefully for Andy Roddick.
Right. Okay. Insight.
Really relevant insight.
It's that kind of time of the tournament now. Slightly starting to lose my marbles personally. That's what's happened at Queen's Day. Tomorrow we're going to have Medvedev against Simon. Who's winning that?
Medvedev.
And then we've got Auger Aliassime against Feliciano Lopez.
Auger Aliassime.
For me as well.
Although Lopez does feel like an irresistible force.
So we're having a Medvedev against Auger Aliassime final. All three of us.
That's quite cool. That would be quite cool.
Yeah. What about this resumption of Dan Evans and Ken Skupski against Lopez and Murray? It's a set to love for Murray and Lopez, but they're 4-5 down on serve.
But they'd just broken back, hadn't they? The Evans and Skupski served for
saved
it.
Saved a couple of set points.
Yes. I think Murray Lopez are coming through that.
So do I. Then they've got to play against Henry Contenon and John Pierce.
I think they'll lose that.
Yeah, I mean, logic says you're right.
Catherine's got that sort of, but I just think it might happen.
Yeah.
Looking right.
I just think it might happen.
Okay. And then on the court one, Bob Bryan and Mike Bryan against Rajiv Ram and Joe Salisbury. We've got the Paul Hutchins trophy going on at the moment with the junior teams of the United States and Great Britain against each other. There's the wheelchair championships, Alfie Hewitt and Gordon Reid in action. That's all going on. I'd like to say you could get tickets, but you can't. It's a complete sellout.
Until about 5 hours ago, there were 3 sets of brothers in the doubles.
Mm. Yeah, I feel it because I noticed in the piece I was writing today the word brother kept popping up. I was like, oh, and that's his brother. And he was playing, that's his brother. And I think someone else's brother.
Yeah, and not all brothers were on the same side of the court. It was all a brotherly mess.
Only one brotherly team.
Yes.
Actually, apparently you can get ground pass access if you'd like to come tomorrow. And then you can watch
some. Not that he wasn't
media
listening to
media director declares tickets not available.
Yeah, I suppose I'm going to slightly correct that in case I get in trouble. Oh, Pierre Hugobert is having a bit of a run of form ever since announcing, or Andy Murray announcing for him, that they're going to play doubles together.
He had some interesting things to say to L'Equipe today.
What did he say?
He was just explaining the decision. He admitted that it's a tough one for Mahou. He admitted that that's awkward.
Yeah. Though he did say he was like, you know, Mahou played with Federer once, so it's kind of...
Yeah, fine. He said, oh, I hope he'll understand because Mahou had the chance to play
Which was in 2011 or something.
In Brisbane.
Yeah.
In Brisbane. And, yeah...
Or maybe a bit more recent, but it certainly wasn't as recent as I thought.
He's grasping, isn't he? He's self-justifying.
Yeah. He knows.
Because he feels bad about it, because we know they do love one another, and they've probably had some awkward conversations this year. Nicola Mahou seems lovely. He'll be all right with it.
Particularly after he said he was going to concentrate on his singles.
Well, yeah, you know, that's the thing.
Do you think Nicola Mahou is furiously making phone calls to get himself an awesome doubles
partner?
He's
playing with Eduardo Rojavazanan.
Okay, it's not quite the rock star name.
I was thinking
Federer slash Nadal.
I think he's busily deleting Hugobert off the old Instagram.
Well, they're playing together though. They're playing together at the US Open, so it's a bit of a strength. They're getting back together for that.
Have they confirmed that? That's
what Mahou said.
I guess they're all right then.
It's a bit of an odd one, but it does feel a bit like a breakup where you're like, you know, I just want to be single for a while and then. A few weeks later with someone else. Like, Cheers, Pierre Hug.
We going to talk about other events? No.
Yeah, Roger Federer, that bloke. In Halle, who's beaten Roberto Bautista Agut 6-4 in the third. That's two consecutive three-setters. Alexander Zverev has lost 7-6 in the third to David Goffin. Oh, dear.
Yeah.
It's not getting any better, is it?
I genuinely did a piece on Tsitsipas, Auger Aliassime, and I was saying how they feel like the kind of, in boxing terms, the kind of mandatory challenger to the big three. You know, it feels like those two are the guys. I genuinely took me a moment to think, oh, yeah, there's also Zverev, who is the world number five. But just at the moment, I don't know about you guys, but he seems so... His trajectory seems so the other way from Tsitsipas and Auger Aliassime.
And there are... points dropping off that world number five, but it could start to plummet quite quick. I mean, not, you know, he's not going to drop outside the world's top 100, but he could not be a top 10 player quite soon.
Could be. So we'll see what happens to him at Wimbledon. Birmingham, Ash Barty beat Venus Williams 6-4, 6-3.
Could become world number one if she wins the title on Sunday.
Ash Barty?
Yes.
That's cool.
We're off Ash Barty.
She put out the loveliest quote about her Andy Murray rejection, which she basically did. The quote was something along... Let's see if I can find it. The quote was, when I got the text from Andy asking if I wanted to play mixed doubles with him, it was one of the... I think she said it was the hardest decision she's ever had to make. Imagine that. Oh.
And this is someone that's
hardest
retired from tennis and started a professional cricket career and then made the decision to try and return. Oh, I feel awful. I regret.
But she still made it. She dumped him. And, it's not happening. So Andy Murray's still got
to find... Sharapova's up for it, though.
She's put out the feelers. Andy Murray... Who made his thoughts
quite
clear.
She feels kind of increasingly less relevant. I mean, she's obviously barely played, but yet still has this huge following. But.
She's neither currently relevant nor has any pedigree in doubles.
Yeah.
None at all. But she's up for it, Andy.
Yeah. What other results have we had in Birmingham? Today, I've got the results here. Yulia Gerges has beaten Yulia Putintseva 6-3, 6-2. Petra Martic won. Remember when she was playing well at the Where was she playing well? French Open. That's right. Yelena Ostapenko, she beat in three. Barbara Strytsova.
Finally had been playing quite well.
Yeah. Barbara Strytsova, who is another player who's tweeted her determination to catch the eye of Andy Murray as a mixed doubles partner, has beaten Kristina Pliskova. Is it that one? Yeah.
Yeah, because she beat Carolina the other day.
That's right. So that's what's happening in Birmingham. In Mallorca, no doubt Sevastova has won because she always wins.
She beat Ye Fan Wang.
Yeah, she's always in the final there. And it's Kerber, Bencic and Kenin. These are all the names that are going to be featuring in the semi-finals tomorrow. So that just about does it for another edition of the Tennis Podcast. Charlie, lovely to have you with us.
Lovely to be here.
You're going to come back with us on Wimbledon?
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome.
Should we settle a bet on air? Well, not a bet. Something close to it, the Tennis Podcast equivalent of a bet.
Does it mean me winning?
Charlie, would Nick Kyrgios drop shot Andy Murray? Not drop shot. Underarm serve. It's been a long day.
Would
definitely drop shot him.
Would Nick Kyrgios underarm serve Andy Murray?
I think... if I had to go one way, I would say he would not, but I wouldn't.
We've been the Tennis Podcast.
But I wouldn't totally rule it out.
Jim in the Telegraph.
4-1. 4-1 down I am, according to this sort of unofficial in-person pole vault. Let's get the real version on pole vault of 1,196 votes that we've had at Tennis Podcast, 60% of which have said yes. He would underarm serve Andy Murray, against Andy Murray, which is the right answer.
60% of people less informed than Charlie Eccleshare.
And we are brought to you in association with the Telegraph, executive produced by tennisballs.com, with our mascot Rio with a Y. And we will be back after the semis. Bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.